Hi, good morning. How are you? Thank you for being here. I'm so excited for today's episode. This is another grower interview, and today we have Erica from the Bloom F Flower Farm, Flower Farm from Portland, Tennessee. We've got lots of things to talk about. Previously, for growers interviews, you heard from Corinne from the Bloom Chick Flower Farm. So today we're going to have some different things to talk about with Erica. Erica has a very fun, exciting story. So I think that I know that there will be people who can relate and learn from this. And this is going to be very candid, straightforward, no show, no bullshit. We each have a glass of wine, and we're gonna
It's
have a
pretty early.
great time. It's 10 in the morning when we're doing this. We're getting a great start on the day. So let's get started. I'm just gonna do a very quick intro for Erica, and then I'm gonna turn it over to her to talk a little bit more about what she does, who she is, where she comes from, how she kind of got into growing. And then we've got 3 points that we'll talk about. The first is kind of how she moved her farm from Pennsylvania to Tennessee. Second is about Southern United States Dahlia growing and productions and the struggles that go along with that. And then the final thing we'll talk about is things that she's learned along the way and really took into consideration when laying out her new farm. Because I know that a lot of people are coming into the industry with not having laid out a farm before. So there are points, things, and topics that, really should be taken into consideration that I'm excited to kind of talk about with Erica. So from what I've learned about you, Erica, is that you're a no bullshit, badass grower chick who takes shit from no one, wants to do things as efficiently productive and productive as possible. So with that intro, why don't you talk about yourself for just a minute and then we'll dive in.
So I do not come from a farming background. I was a suburban kid,
Okay.
in suburbia,
Nice.
surfing, that kind of thing. So anyway,
Surfing?
yeah,
Where at?
beach. I grew up on Long Island in New
Oh,
York.
okay. Very cool.
So, we had the big third of an acre backyard.
Fun.
So knew nothing really about flowers and
Okay.
So I came to farming. It was a long road. We bought our ha first house and I was interested in the roses that were there and learned how to take care of them. And then we moved to London and
Like London, like
England.
okay.
Yeah. So we lived there for 7 years
Okay.
and I kind of had to figure out what I was going to do while I was there.
Can you bring the mic closer to you just a
Maybe.
little bit? Okay, perfect.
Is
Great.
that better?
Yes.
Okay. So I was interested in plants, just roses at that point. So I took some horticultural classes
In London.
in London. I took the RHS course.
Oh, fun.
Yeah,
Dang.
I did pretty well.
All right.
And then I took another course on plants and planting design from Capel Manor, and
Yep.
then I loved it. And then went on to the English School of Gardening and took a degree course in landscape design.
Okay.
And realized I'm terrible at
Okay.
math.
Great.
So, and I was much more interested in the plant side of things, mostly perennials and shrubs.
Yep,
And
yep.
then when we moved back to the US, I went back to teaching
Okay.
and did that for a couple of years, but it, I missed being outside. So people started asking, I mean, I had a garden and flowers, and people started asking for bouquets. And so I started making bouquets and selling them, probably not for enough.
But you were learning.
I know, I was that person that every farmer hated because my bouquets were like $5.
God.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. But I didn't know, And flower farming wasn't I mean, it wasn't really like a trendy, it wasn't a
It
trendy
wasn't on the
thing.
radar.
No, it wasn't on the radar. And so I was just growing like in my perennial borders and
Just for
then
the hell of it.
Yeah, and then I saw Florette on Instagram. My sister-in-law introduced me to Instagram, and then she just popped up, that big truck full of dahlias.
Yeah.
That was the, and I was like, who is this chick? I like those flowers. It wasn't about flower farming. It was just like, I really like those flowers, and
yeah,
how do I get them?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started out with, I think, 8 dahlias the first year.
Nice.
Yes.
Cool.
All from Swan Islands.
Oh, wow. Went right in.
Just went right in. I bought my 8, and I was like, look at me. I am so badass. My 8 dahlias. And I was really successful with them.
Good.
And then the next year, it was like 50.
Yeah.
And then the next year, it was...
Because you learned how to, like, properly divide and figuring out
storage.
Oh,
no, I did not.
Oh, great. So we fucked that up.
Yeah, right, totally. Yeah, those 8 just bit it in the garage.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was like, oh, what happened? I'm like, yeah.
Oh, shit.
They're shriveled into something that resembles, like, a twig. So we started over. I didn't know anything about dividing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about storage.
Okay.
I didn't know anything. I knew nothing.
Right.
I knew jack shit about dahlias. And then you learn. I mean, I learned. So I started following Florette.
Yep.
And then I realized, like, there was a proper way to lay things out. Don't laugh at me, but my first dahlia bed was, like, 14 feet wide.
Holy
with no
shit.
no pathways or anything.
Okay.
So... Actually, that was the second year when I had like 50. So like they all went in this giant bed and I couldn't get into the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But I had support. I needed a ladder with like a board, 2 ladders with a board.
Oh,
so I could
God.
Yeah, it was
maneuver
bad.
Through the puzzle pieces.
And then so my brain was still in landscape design mode.
Right.
And like all the rows were like, they weren't rows, they were beds. They were swervy.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I know. It's so fancy. They were fancy.
Yeah, sounds like.
But not very practical.
Okay.
So I think for me, I needed to like shift the way that I was looking at things.
Shift the mindset.
Yeah.
For
so
sure.
So total paradigm change in terms of like, how do we grow?
Mm-hmm.
And then learned, you know, how to be more productive, how to get more out of your growing space, you know, going to straight lines and things like that. And that changed that pretty much changed everything for me because I realized how much you could get out of a small space.
Yeah. When you were in PA, how much space were you growing on?
Not much.
Backyard?
We had 3 acres.
Okay.
But I would say it was probably 0.75 that was in production. But I like built up to that. And
right.
I had to be really sneaky about how I used space because it wasn't level.
Okay.
And we had huge drainage issues.
Yeah.
So the water was crazy. The first year that I actually grew and sold wholesale, I lost about, 40% of my tubers because they rotted. And then I realized how bad the drainage actually was at that point. But, you know, I always learn.
You learn by doing.
Yeah.
And you learn by fucking up and doing it again.
Yeah, and I do a lot of fucking up.
Which is fine.
Just generally speaking, yeah. Every year, there's at least 2 major fuck-ups.
Okay.
But then I learn not to do those things again.
You're so smart. Okay, so we brought up PA. We brought up like kind of how we got started.
Yeah.
We're obviously not in Pennsylvania right now.
No, okay. We are in...
Right now, we're in Springfield, Tennessee.
Yeah.
But your farm is in Portland, Tennessee.
Yeah.
So
How did we get there?
Let's talk about moving this bitch because it wasn't an easy
process.
I don't recommend moving
a farm. I do not recommend moving a farm. My marriage survived.
Oh, God.
Just barely.
Oh, God.
I was shutting down the farm in PA, and he was here trying to, like, find people to, like, till and do all these things. I was farming without a tiller or without a tractor.
Okay, in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right. And so everything was, like, with my little Honda. And,
yep.
So we, when we got here, we did not have any machinery.
Right.
And the place is a lot bigger. And
yeah.
So that was the first big purchase. But, like, even at that, we were coming out of the COVID lockdown.
Right.
And so...
Yep.
Everything was on back order and whatnot. So like so I was shutting down the farm and he was here trying to get things
rolling.
Yeah.
Okay. So I met you 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And I feel like I've known you forever now.
Yeah. Instagram will do that. And I saw your farm for the first time yesterday. I'm going to like make the assumption that your farm did not look like it does now when you purchased it.
No.
So tying that back to moving everything, right, what infrastructure, components, parts and pieces did you have and have experience with in Pennsylvania that needed to make their way a couple hundred miles south?
So we had no infrastructure, not really. Okay. I did not have tunnels. I had Caterpillar tunnels.
Yep.
I'm trying to think, what else do we have? I mean, I had my John Deere ride-on mower.
Nice.
I know.
Did that come south?
That did come south.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had, what is it? Just a two walk-behind tillers.
Yep.
One was a really small one that I started using because the land had been worked so well.
Okay.
I didn't need to use a bigger tiller.
Yeah.
So my shovels.
Ooh, hand tools. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
All my hand tools came.
Any like plant stock, plant material?
Yeah. So, all of my dahlia collection came. So basically when I was shutting down the farm, I had to dig all the dahlias and then I had to get them all divided, and I had a very short time frame to do that.
Yeah.
And so, they were divided, counted, labeled, did all the stuff. That all came with me. So I came down with probably, I don't know, 8,500 tubers, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit more. I brought my hydrangea with me.
Mm-hmm.
So they were dug. And I brought my sedum with me.
Might as well.
Which is so dumb.
I mean, it's one less thing you have to buy. They're easy to propagate.
Just, I mean, of all the things, you know, like it was, for me, when I was moving, it was like priority. I'm going to bring the sedum.
Sure.
And it's like, I could also buy a tray from, you know, 72 tray through Ball for $50.
Less than $50.
So all that, the labor that went into like digging them to bring it wasn't a wise. So I can talk about like what not to do in terms of
moving.
But I also brought my peonies with me.
Smart.
And I did divide those.
Smart.
And I ended up just putting them in the landscape because
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Might as well.
I had ordered from Ownings my first 500. So
what are some things that you did that you probably wouldn't do again if you were talking to someone who is in the situation of having to move a farm?
Yeah, do not bring your tools.
Yeah.
But don't bring things like landscape fabric and frost cloth and plastic for low tunnels and stuff like that, because when you lay out a new farm, you're going to deal with different dimensions and lengths.
Yep.
Our beds were very narrow, and so like my fabric widths were like 38 feet long, and so I would start over with all of those things. There's no reason to bring that kind of stuff. So I actually did give a lot away to a young farmer who was working with me at the end of the season.
Okay. In Pennsylvania?
Yeah. It's True Blooms Farms. So she was just starting out. So I was like, you can take this, and here's this, and here's that.
It's your lucky day.
Yeah. And in terms of plant material, some things might be worth bringing, like the tubers for sure.
Mm.
Know, it's a dahlia mania, and so.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So bring those, but don't leave the sedum.
Leave the sedum.
Leave the perennials. Just leave them for whoever's coming next.
Things that could be easily propagated, though, you know, maybe take along, like
willow
branches.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Things that maybe won't take up a ton of space. So, so our last trip down, I drove the Sprinter, and the Sprinter was filled just top to bottom with all the plant material I brought, and some of it I didn't even plant. Don't tell my husband. The hydrangea were important for me, so I got them. I had gotten them from a good friend, and I wanted to make sure I brought those. They were really beautiful.
Yeah.
And some were ones that he bred, so.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like, think about what's going to be of most value, and those are the things that are not like really consumable.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Okay, fair enough. And you brought chickens with you?
Yes, we did.
What the fuck?
So, okay, there were our COVID chickens, and they were all named, and so they were
of
like our little...
Of course they were named.
Yeah. Don't name your chickens.
No, never a good idea.
They die.
Like, oh, they die?
Well, we only have one left from...
Oh, from the original clutch.
From the original, yeah.
Got it.
So I've learned not to name them, get too attached, but... Yeah, so the chickens came down. Okay. We were like the chicken train. They were in...
The chicken train.
They were in the back of the Honda in these chicken crates, and it was like a 16-hour drive, and they were in... It was... We were ridiculous. I should have given them away, but I was like,
no. I mean, they're named. You can't give them away.
I know. The only one that we have left is Courtney Love.
Courtney Love.
Yeah. She's a screamer.
She's a screamer?
Yeah, she's a screamer.
Oh, she's a loud diva. Yeah. Okay. What color is Courtney Love?
She is like kind of a cream colored.
Ooh.
Yeah. But so we moved the chickens. I'm like trying to think what else with the farm. I mean, really, the only plant material I should have moved was the dahlias and the hydrangea.
Peonies could be replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, that's some good points to think about. Like, prioritize what you need to. Yeah.
Yeah, and realize when you come to your new place, there are 50,000 things to do, including figuring out what the layout of the farm is going to be. So I didn't even know where they were all going.
True.
So the only things that actually would have like survived well were the tubers that went. The cooler was already built. That was like a priority because I knew that down here the temperature fluctuated more and they needed storage. So
yeah, stable storage conditions.
Yeah, we had the barn reno was underway and the contractors were told that like
this has to be done.
Yeah,
before we move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Sweet. Well, I think we kind of covered some like good points to think about for first topic. Let's move into Southern Dahlia production. Some of the struggles that have gone along with that. You can talk about whatever you want. You don't have to like go into too much detail if you don't want to.
No, that's fine. You can ask me anything.
Okay. So I think I've only ever had experience growing dahlias in what I would consider to be like a northern space. Mm-hmm. We're far northwest Illinois. Like cold winters. Summers get warm, but relatively mild. I would consider it probably somewhat comparable to like where you were at NPA.
Yeah, we had cold winters. There were some weeks in the summer where the temperatures got up, but like the temperature would come down at night, maybe like a week stretch of like really hot.
Yep.
And then it just went kind of back to normal. Nothing like it is here.
So let's talk about from like a grower's perspective, a dahlia grower's perspective, what are some like weather challenges and environmental challenges, not like soil, not insect pressure, just like weather focused. What are some things that you've learned and experienced this past season?
So when at first I thought this was going to be the perfect growing environment because it was warmer earlier, but it's the heat is very different here and the intensity of the sun is also different than what I was dealing with. So the heat, we had early heat this year, June. We were up in the hundreds.
Jesus.
For a long stretch, and I had no irrigation.
Jesus.
Set up.
Okay.
Well, the company that was doing the irrigation were...
flaking out.
A little slower than what I thought they would be. Yeah. So, we were hand watering, overhead watering and whatnot. So, temperature, it stayed hot.
Okay.
I think it started to get hot in May, late May, all June, all July, I think all of August.
When we say hot, we're like in like 90 to 100.
Yeah.
Jeez,
usually upper 90s.
Okay.
And the humidity, we just swim out to the field, like right through the humidity.
Gross.
So the humidity I didn't find was as much as a challenge as the heat.
Okay.
And sun intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I needed to mitigate the sun intensity and try to regulate heat.
Right.
Because the dahlias were really suffering. And at night, they would spend a lot more time recovering as opposed to putting on growth.
And when you say they were taking a hard hit, what were some physical signs that you could like immediately tell as a grower?
They were completely wilted. Okay. They would look like they were dying.
Yeah.
They would just melt down. And then at night when the sun, when there wasn't the, obviously when there wasn't the intensity of the sun, mm-hmm. you could see them starting to perk back up and the leaves would become more turgid. And so I knew I needed to get something in place
right.
to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Other signs, it really is the wilting. Oh, burning leaves.
Okay.
So the tips of the leaves would burn.
Yep.
And I knew what sunburn was
right.
from the few experiences I had in PA. But mm-hmm. like the tips of leaves become brown and then kind of white. And
okay.
there was a lot of like crunchiness
yeah.
on new growth. When the new growth, when the plants are about knee high and mm-hmm. the new growth started to, I started to see that, I knew that there was like.
Some problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even about overhead watering, I think, at that point that
yeah.
was going to save them.
No.
It was just the blaring sun because we do not have any shade on the west side of our property.
Okay.
And so literally once the sun came over the trees at about 9 a.m,
yeah.
maybe 8 a.m, because the angle of the sun is a little bit different. It was just full on.
Full blaring sun
until 8 o'clock at night.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those long days that we all
yeah.
went back,
mm-hmm.
I dreaded them. I was like, is this sun ever going to fucking set?
So kind of the solution that we came up with, or you came up with, were to build these huge, massive, and very nice shade structures.
Yeah, yeah.
So the process of that was, did you build them yourself? Did you have somebody come in and do it?
I'm so handy. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
yeah, no, we had a company come in and do it. So we we had our tunnel put up.
Okay.
So we, I wrote a grant
mm-hmm.
to the NRCS for a tunnel, and
mm-hmm.
We invested, because they only cover about 75%, we invested in a pretty big 30 by 96.
Yeah.
And the company that came out was phenomenal. And when I realized I need shade over this, I can't plant trees because they're going to take years to mature.
They're going to provide shade that you can't move. They're going to take water and nutrition away from your soil. It's going to
yep.
take up bed space.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I contacted I was like, we're going to do this on the cheap.
Oh, no.
I'm going to figure out how to do this. I'm like, maybe I can stick some tall T-posts in and run some shade. That's
yeah.
not going to work because we get wind.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like we're kind of in Tornado Alley sometimes.
You're not wrong.
No, I know. I know. The wind's like, 20-mile-an-hour, 25-mile, 40-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, the first chicken coop that we had, it completely blew over.
Oh, God.
Chickens weren't in it. So
oh, they weren't?
No chickens were killed in that episode.
I mean, a little
but,
scrambled egg
yeah.
is not a problem.
Courtney made it out alive.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I can't do this.
Right.
And it was too freaking hot because
yeah because it's middle of summer at this
right.
point
so the beds
your
so
shit's melting you're exhausted
all the beds are planted I'm rocking and rolling and realizing I gotta go in and fit in these structures and
mm-hmm.
so I already said I'm not good at math so none of the beds were actually straight
oh good
yeah no that was I've learned the importance of the Pythagorean theorem
and
in
like,
terms of squaring shit off
just
yeah.
pulling a line
yeah
a straight line
I did but, like, everything was
oh,
off.
It was, like, tilted.
And then when we made the beds with the bed mound, or I'll talk about equipment that we had to invest in.
Oh, yeah.
But when we made the bed with the bed mounder,
mm-hmm.
they didn't cut off all at the same length.
Oh.
So some beds ended up being 52 feet and some ended up being 44.
Oh, great. Okay, so nice and consistent there.
Yeah.
For sure.
So when our friends from Scenic Acres came in to
do the structures,
the shade structures up, they were like, the measurements are a bit off, miss. I was like, how off are they?
Cut this shit, boys. How fucked up are we?
They were so nice, though. They were like, but you've done a really good job. I'm like, you're such liars.
Yep. You're just making sure that you get a tip at the end of this, aren't you? Okay.
So, So I realized I couldn't build them. I did just for experimental,
mm-hmm.
just for an experiment. Is it worth it to invest in something? I did stick up some 7-foot T-posts
mm-hmm.
and ran 50% shade cloth over the cafes.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what? They weren't melting down.
Right.
And I was like, this is the, and then I was like,
this is what I have to do.
This is the answer to the problem. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to grow dahlias here unless I have shade. Mm-hmm. There's no way.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get quality blooms. Mm-hmm. You know, I needed the plants to be healthy. Yeah. I needed them to produce,
yeah.
To grow at the time that they needed to be growing in order for me to get into the market. And like, I usually aim for like second week of July, at least in PA. This year it'll be a little bit earlier.
Okay.
To get blooms to market.
Yeah.
That's when me for financially, I need to start making that money.
Right.
So,
and sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Your channel of sale is through florist and wholesale.
That's correct.
Direct to wholesaler.
Right.
Who is reselling your product.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. I can move a lot of flowers that way. It fits my model and the way that my field is planted.
Yeah.
And so I contacted a fencing company and they could come in and put in timber posts, set timber posts, and then run a very complicated wire system support. It's like what ginseng growers were doing.
Yeah.
At first that was the model I thought that I would use. I did a ton of research on shade structures. There's not a lot out there.
Okay.
Warren Vigor in Australia has built his own shade structures out of wood posts and wire and then shade on top.
Is that shade that they're using white or black?
He's using black.
Okay. Because I follow an amazing, like really large scale cut grower in South Africa. Adney's flowers.
Oh, I thought Adine?
Sure,
or
maybe.
Yeah.
I'm horrible with pronunciation. She's a badass.
She is.
She's like doing the damn thing.
She's selling hydrangea right now. I was like, do you ship overseas?
Macrophylla from Europe and Penticillata from Europe as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the magical macrophyllas. Yes, very, very cool. But everything that she's growing under is all shade structure.
I just started following her recently, and I hadn't seen that. It may have changed my decision about the type of shade cloth that I was that I invested in.
Mm-hmm.
I would have reached out to her
right.
and just said, you know, we're having to build these.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always curious to do like side by side comparisons between like a black material and a white material,
mm-hmm.
because you know with black it's going to be absorbing that sun and that heat and providing shade, but with white it's going to reflect that. So
right.
I don't know if it's going to keep it. It probably would keep it cooler, and you're also, I think you would have like a better light deprivation with the white,
mm-hmm.
Just because it's more filtered. It's not so like true shade black.
Right, and so I knew that there was white out there. Dave Dowling had mentioned about white being available and like the quality of reflecting.
Right,
but it's not readily available.
True,
and so for me, I could. For the very short timeline that I had to get these and to get this done, the black was available immediately.
Yeah,
in any length and width that I wanted.
Perfect.
So I mean, it was a decision made out of panic.
Yeah, I mean, it was
and fear that I was gonna lose the entire field.
Yeah,
which I think if I hadn't, I don't know what would have happened without the.
But that didn't happen.
No, it didn't.
So we're not going to talk about that.
We had a fence company come in, and they could have built something, but it would have been much like the ginseng farms. And I wanted something that was going to be much longer lasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how can we support shade fabric? And I looked at the tunnel, and I'm like, why?
Why can't we just do like an oversized version of this?
Right.
Yeah.
So I contacted... The designer / sales
mm-hmm.
guy and basically said, this is what I need.
Yeah.
Can we do some sort of modified
mm-hmm.
hoop house? And he said, sure, let's work it out. And so we talked through what I wanted and how wide they mm-hmm. could go
mm-hmm.
And still fit in within the rows because I didn't want like posts going straight into the middle of the beds that were already made. So,
it'd be a pain in the ass to deal with.
Yeah, he helped me work all of that out. We modified the hoop structure,
mm-hmm.
spacing, wind bracing,
that kind of,
and there's wind bracing on those hoops.
Good.
And instead of like a center purlin, they're mm-hmm. offset and.
Yep.
They're 30 feet wide.
Okay.
And technically 100 feet long, but mm-hmm. I broke them into 50-foot sections with a 10-foot path up the middle.
Okay.
And yeah, it worked. It worked out, and it actually was cheaper than having a fencing company come in and put up a quote unquote ginseng structure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. So to give a visual for people listening to this, because mm-hmm. we obviously are not at your farm and we're not doing video of your structures, but they can go to your Instagram and see visuals. But it's basically what I would consider kind of like a gutter connect style greenhouse where there's multiple bays that connect together, or are they completely freestanding?
They're completely freestanding.
Okay.
There's 10 feet in between each structure.
Okay.
And so I'm using those 10 feet to plant peonies.
More perennials. Got it.
Okay. I planted this fall, but yeah, that they did have dahlias because that the original field.
Right.
But I knew going forward that I didn't want any of the dahlias outside of the shade structure, which is why we're modifying path width and for next year.
Yep.
The paths were a little bit, they can't be too wide, but there's definitely space to put another row in and still be able to freely walk up and down the rows.
And when you're taking into consideration and into account the value and the investment of that shade structure, you've got to get as many plants under that house as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Okay, cool. So that was hurdle number one.
Yeah, so interestingly, I kind of begged him. I'm like, it's like 100 degrees. Like, I need somebody to come out and, like, get these up. I'm going to lose my entire crop.
Yeah.
And so it was, we planned this all out on a Friday, and they were there on July 5th, Tuesday, July 5th.
No shit.
They installed all six structures in, like, 4 hours.
Shade cloth pulled, ready to go.
Everything. Oh, my God. You know, they sunk the post. They came in, they squared it off. They sunk mm-hmm. the post in. They mm-hmm. got a crew of four guys.
Dang.
I know. They know their shit.
Yeah.
I was amazed.
The value of professionals.
And it was like 96 degrees. I kept bringing them ice pops and like Gatorade.
What do y'all need?
Yeah. I'm like,
you need a hot pool boy with a fan. I can find one. Don't worry.
but yeah. So, and then the difference it made immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So we use 50% shade cloth.
Okay.
And it's about 6 degrees cooler under the shade. Yep. And then what was even more important was that the intensity of the sun was decreased significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I had no more burning. I had no more wilting. And it was still 96 degrees out. So.
Right. How long did it take before you could visually see a difference in the plants? Was it immediately?
Immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Okay.
So after that was done, I basically drank a bottle of wine and got up the next morning, went out and had a party in the field.
That
because
a girl.
It was, yeah, I mean, they didn't spend the night recovering from
true, that's right.
being hit by constant sun and heat. They actually were able to do fucking their thing girl. And put on growth.
Yeah.
And coinciding with that, the drip irrigation was hooked up within a few days. The irrigation company came out because I said, I need water.
Yeah.
So it was a combination, but I think more so that getting the sun off of them.
Okay. For the actual shade material that you used, was it knitted fabric? Was it knitted cloth or woven cloth? Because there's a difference. Do you know? I'm trying to find a picture that Karen put on her story last night, and it would tell me. Because... it's knitted. It's knitted cloth.
Knitted, and it's 50%.
Yep.
It is 50%. Yeah. And some people are like, it's too much.
Yeah.
30%
wouldn't do it.
No. Not here.
I know that when we use shade cloth on structures and just like provide shade on the prop house and for summer crops, 50 is always our minimum that we'll use too. Because if you're going to do shade cloth, just... Like,
you're doing it for a reason.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go half-assed. Like, I'm Don't not going to... What 30%. Is it? The 15 ag...
Oh, yeah. Agribon, like, 5 or... Yeah.
If it's ag 15. 15. Like, why would you put toilet paper over the top of your plants to protect them? Like,
That ain't going to do shit, sis.
Get your 50. Like, if you need to put it on, then get the 50 and do it. And guess what? It's not going to rip in the wind.
Well, that part, too.
Yeah.
You know, you get what you pay for. Okay. So, hurdle number one, shade.
Yeah.
Hurdle number two...
Irrigation.
Okay. Well, we understand the problem there. It's just too slow. Because you have a pond on your farm.
Well, we do, but that pond is stagnant.
Oh.
It is more of a collection.
I see.
Area for water that was dug by the previous owner who had cows.
Okay. So you pull from there?
We do, but we have, so water, we should talk about that when laying out a farm, but
sure.
We pull from a spring.
Okay. Oh, you did mention that.
Yeah. But I'm happy to talk about that because it was one of the things when you're planning a farm that you need to think about even before buying it.
Is water source.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll cover that in a minute.
Okay.
Next struggle, bugs.
Oh, God. Thank you. By the way, thank you. You did a post on...
A story. Because I don't...
It was a story, and I follow you, of course. Why wouldn't I follow you?
I mean, some people do. Some people think I'm an asshole, which is totally fine. I could agree with him on some days.
Not everybody's going to love you, and that's fine, right? I love you.
That's okay.
And I also appreciate the fact so much that you share information because I watch your stories and you were applying Mainspring because you had an issue with
corn borer. Every year.
So I had some funky shit going out on the field and I'm like, the plants were collapsing and I was like, what is going on? I didn't deal with this in PA.
Right.
And there were holes in the stems. Mm-hmm. And I went back to your story.
And piles of little shit outside the hole.
Yep. And then sawdust.
Yep.
Inside.
And then if you cut that stem open, it's going to be like a trail of brown.
Goo.
They continue to poop as they chew down to the crown.
It's disgusting, yeah.
Yeah, it's gross.
But they attacked Cora Lee and Bloomquist mm-hmm. Allen. Mm-hmm. Those were the two that they went after
They're
first.
They're wicked on Cora Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, please, thank you for going for the... Freaking blush, yeah. Assholes. As the plants are melting down, like, I had a picture of you in my head.
Oh, God. I remember you texting me and being like, what was that chemical? What was it? I'll talk about Mainspring for a minute. So Mainspring is a insecticide.
Yep.
Pretty hardcore insecticide that...
That targets
chewing, gnawing, caterpillar-type insects. And it's a synthetic,
systemic.
Yep. So the way that we apply it at our farm is we're injecting it through the irrigation system. So we really try to cut down on as much as we have to spray just because it's putting particles into the atmosphere and we're breathing it in and it's not something that we want to do. So I'm always a huge proponent of an injected anything, just because it takes a lot of that bitchy shit out of the equation. We've used Mainspring for years. It's very, very effective. It works very well. We know that whenever we see corn borer presence, which you see, you know, little brown holes, burrow holes that'll go right into the stem, usually at a leaf node join. Yep. That's where we usually see it. That's like immediate sign that you've got corn borers for the season. And ours would always, you know, go in through the side of the stem, shoot straight down to the crown and eat out all of the eyes of the crown. And it's like, well, we're producing for cuts, but we're also producing for tuber production. So this is like really bad. It's worst case scenario, basically.
Yeah. To see it happening to your field. It's like one plant after another. It's like a domino effect. Literally, it stems collapsing. And so the shade's up.
Yep.
And
you spent thousands of dollars on these shade structures.
And now the plants are collapsing. It was like one calamity after another. But Mainspring.
Yep.
Targets the that specific boring insect. Not right. Boring as in like I'm no fun, but right. Like boring as in like
chewing and gnawing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a fertilizer injection system, which we are going to be getting in the spring.
Smart.
So I found a systemic called Cerisa that has the same chemical.
Yep.
And I could use that as a foliar spray.
Yep. Application.
And that's what I did. But it's, again, it is specifically targeting that particular insect. Because
we don't want to kill things that we don't have to.
Right.
Right. And we want to be very, like, specific and target what is eating our plants.
Right.
And when you're, this, I think this is a really important thing too. When you're approaching a certain crop from somewhat of a monoculture perspective, like we grow a lot of dahlias, okay? And that's a really big part of our production. When you're taking into account that much of a presence of crop, you have to realize that there are going to be certain insects that will find that crop and just decimate it because it's all the same. Mm-hmm. You know, genetically, regardless of the thousands of varieties of dahlias that are on the market, genetically, they're very, very similar. Very similar. They're the same fucking species.
Well, and the dahlia is the perfect host for
many things.
This, it's the European something moth, right?
Yep.
And because it's got the hollow stem.
Yes.
And that's what they want.
Yep.
So, I do know that sunflowers can be used as a trap crop. Mm-hmm. My friend Julia at Hickory Grove said she deals with it.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a huge ag area,
okay.
Very more rural.
Yep.
And so she said, plant sunflowers as a trap crop, but the deer here will eat it.
Right.
So it's not really.
There's that part too.
And now I'm attracting deer, which I don't want to do. So.
So I do want to talk about that injector for a minute.
Mm.
We have utilized two different kinds of injectors. We've used the Dram Siphon Jet, which is available for like $20 on Amazon. It's not as precise as what we use now, which is a chemolyzer. The chemolyzer is, I think it's like between $200 and $300, hooks up to your garden hose. And both of those are siphon-driven injectors. Very, very easy to use. And I talk about both of these pieces in the chrysanthemum episodes. So you can go back to episodes 14 and 15 from season 2 of the podcast, and you can learn and hear more about those. So I won't take more time because we have some more things to talk about.
But so if you're on a budget,
yes,
Dram,
the siphon jet,
will do the job.
Yes.
So if you are just starting out and you know that you have, and you have, let's say you have 100
mm-hmm.
plants in.
The Dram Siphon Jet is your friend.
Yeah.
And you can run any water soluble anything through the siphon jet.
Could you run fertilizer through?
Absolutely. That's what I started using it for, was mm-hmm. fertilizing the field blocks, was we were using, because I didn't want to spend $200 times 5 to hit all of our field blocks.
Right.
So I just would spend $100 on these siphon jets and they would do the trick.
Yeah.
So, yes. Do you want to talk about wireworm?
Yeah.
Okay.
So digging this year went really well. Everything went well. And then when I started washing in order to divide, I started seeing holes through the tubers.
Kind of like a Swiss cheesy look.
Yeah.
Cute.
Uh-huh. Straight through sometimes, in and then up to the neck.
Oh, great.
And so I knew what it was.
Okay.
I knew what it was because I had followed somebody up in British Columbia who dealt with it regularly. Mm-hmm. And it's from click beetle.
Okay.
I had seen click beetle around and I'm like, oh, look at these little decomposers.
Oh, they're so nice.
They're so wonderful to have because look at me. I'm doing all the right things. Uh-huh. I have like my native population of click beetle.
Oh, for God's sake.
And click beetle is a devil because it produces something called wireworm. Which,
yep.
It has like a 7-year life cycle in the soil.
No
FYI.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So if you have these little shits, you're going to have them for a long time.
Shit.
And so in order to get rid of this,
mm-hmm.
Well, basically what they do is they destroy tubers.
Right. Because they're a decomposer.
Right.
So what they're doing
is... They're going to burrow in.
Yep. So that water and air can get into that, and then it's going to decompose.
Yep. Yep.
Which is not really what we want when it comes to tubers.
No, because part of my business model is tuber sales.
Right.
And so, yeah, that did not go well this year.
But we're learning. You know, like an hour ago, we were talking about crops that we could plant that you've learned through research, through reading, that are not super friendly for wireworms, like flax.
Right. Flax and mustard are two particular crops that you can use as cover crops,
mm-hmm.
incorporated into the soil that will... basically drive wireworm out. They don't mm-hmm. like it. The mm-hmm. mustard especially has a fumigant in it.
In the flower.
Yeah.
So with that mustard, you've got a relatively short window of time to get that crop into bloom, terminate it,
and
till it into the soil.
And then you can't plant after growing mustard and tilling it in for 4 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's a 4-week wait period on that one. So it has to be done like in a pretty timely manner.
Yeah.
And you have to consider your planting dates.
Yep.
So I am doing two successions of planting this year.
For dahlias?
Yeah. Smart. And so for the second succession of planting, I am going to put mustard down, mm-hmm. And then till it in and let it just basically cover it,
yeah.
And let it sit until it's ready to be planted.
Yeah, for sure.
So in doing the investigation on wireworm, basically there are multiple ways to deal with it. If you're organic, you can use mustard, cover mm-hmm. crop, mm-hmm. not plant rye.
Oh, one of our favorite cover crops.
Yeah, no, they like rye.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Let's not do that.
We're not going to be using that again.
Right. Which, think about, a mature rye that would be terminated and tilled back into the soil has got a really nice, relatively hard or firm, hollow stem
yep.
that once incorporated into the soil and slightly hydrated is still going to maintain that structure. It's going to be really nice for them to target.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, they like turf. So they like to eat turf.
Okay.
Okay, so wireworms are... So anybody who's going to be creating new beds,
yeah.
okay, you're gonna till in your sod. It is likely that you will have wireworm.
In this part of the U.S.?
I know northeastern.
Okay.
And now, obviously, like, Middle Tennessee is kind of, like, smack dab in the middle, and it's a problem. Right. So I'm assuming it's, like, up and down the coast, all the way up into British Columbia BC. And whatnot. So, yeah, if you till in sod, there is a likelihood that you will have this issue.
Cute.
Yeah. If you're taking over a weedy pasture, which is what we moved into, when we moved to the farm, all it was cow pasture with some barbed wire and a lot of... Oh, what's that weed that I hate? Pigweed.
Oh, the damn amaranth.
Pigweed, which is a host for that moth that produces...
Wireworm.
Not wireworm. The borer.
Oh, the corn borer.
The corn borer.
Cute.
So we're trying to, you know, eliminate as much of the pigweed as possible. But
as I say, you've got like double whammy coming
yeah,
in right
so
now.
Yeah, so if you're a new farmer and you're turning over... areas mm-hmm. to production mm-hmm. for a tuberous root crop,
mm-hmm.
you will likely deal with wireworm. To what degree,
oof.
I'm not sure, but the land that we are now taking care of has not been in production for
a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
While it should have been on my radar, it wasn't because I was so excited to plant.
Yeah, and you had no clue.
And it doesn't affect top growth. So you don't know that you have this problem
mm-hmm.
until you dig the tubers.
Mm-hmm.
So in dealing with it, there are a couple things you can do. You can till.
Okay.
I'm not no-till.
Right.
I'm minimal till.
Okay.
However, the new dahlia areas are going to be tilled a lot.
Yes.
So the more you till, the more you disturb the soil, the less...
Break up that lifestyle.
Yep.
Life cycle.
Yep. So tilling is one way. Yep. Cover cropping.
Yep.
Using the mustard. Flax. Yep. Not using anything that resembles a grass.
Okay.
You don't want... I put down teff. You don't want teff. Because that's...
Okay.
Yeah. No. Teff is beautiful, but you don't want to use that.
It's not what we're looking for.
You can also... Solarizing the soil won't work for this issue.
Oh,
FYI.
Okay.
You can treat with chemical pretreatment, okay. which I'm investigating now.
Kind of like a drench or a fumigation?
A drench.
Drench, okay.
A drench. So the drench, if I use a drench because I'm concerned with like the farm as a whole,
yeah,
it's only going to be used in the areas that we grow dahlias, and they're only going to be put in... I used to just use planting holes to set the tubers in.
Yeah.
I'll do a trench and then we'll treat the trench.
I see.
So it's very directed.
Yep.
To basically keep the wireworm out of
yep.
the tubers.
Yep.
The
other thing with, you know, drenches and chemicals too to really think about and remember and investigate is the half-life or the post-life of it. Because once chemicals are applied, the effectiveness of that chemical is going to depreciate over time. So that's one thing that I always like to bring up when it comes to chemical application is just because you're applying something now doesn't mean it's going to have the same effect 5 months from now.
Right. Interesting with the life cycle or how the wireworm works mm-hmm. is that it is most active in the spring.
Oh.
Like kind of around planting time when okay. the soil is 60 degrees.
Okay.
And they prefer heavier clay soil.
Okay.
So that retains a lot moisture. Of moisture.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking in terms of half-life, right? So yeah. once we're planting, it's the soil drench and then immediate planting.
Yep.
And then as the soil warms up, they go deeper.
Okay.
So I'm hoping it creates that barrier
right.
to prevent them from...
But then, I mean, we obviously had problems with wireworm during tubers, like yeah. during that season too. So then as that soil cools down, they come back
right.
to the surface.
Right.
Right.
So maybe a second drench.
Second drench point. Or play with the half-life. You know, because you're still going to have some residual effect at that point in the season. It won't be what it was in the spring, but you'll have something. So, you know, you could do like a side-by-side trial this right. year on something that you have a lot of, you know.
Like Blizzard.
Like Blizzard.
Blizzard will be my trial.
Like Blizzard. Yes.
The other thing that you can do to monitor is the quartering potatoes.
Oh,
sticking
yeah.
on skewers.
Yeah.
And putting them at the same depth as your tubers.
Yeah,
and then
I can see that.
Pulling them to see,
yeah,
because sure. they'll go for the potatoes first.
Okay.
You pull the potatoes and see if there's
more wireworms. Tender, starchy.
Yeah. So yeah. if there's wireworm, then that will be an indicator for me whether or not I need to reapply.
Yeah, for sure. Makes total sense. I've been poking around on the internet as you've been talking, trying to find like a geographical map of wireworm pressure because I'm very curious to see, you know, where in the U.S. there's substantial presence. And kind of from what I've tracked, which props to Canada for actually having some really good information out and really covering the provinces. The U.S. is absolute shit for this. But I just found a report from Oregon State University who shows a pretty substantial amount of pressure in all of the southern United States. There is moderate pressure kind of from like central Illinois all the way east and up into New England a little bit. Looks like Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine are pretty clean. Like northern Illinois up into Wisconsin and Michigan, very low pressure. And then western United States are pretty clean until you get to like Oregon coast. That's when you see a little bit of a problem come back into play. So just from like a grower's perspective, I like to see things like this to know kind of where I fall in, you know, data that's been collected.
Right. And I think so for so many row crop farmers, they're not going to be reporting on this unless they're growing potatoes or sweet potatoes.
Yes.
So it'd be looking at those areas that specifically grow those crops to see what they're reporting.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's a, you know, it's destructive. It, it reduced my tuber yield by about 65%.
Jeez.
In some cases, I'm coming out of the year with less tubers than I started with in the field.
Dang.
So it was, you know, it was a huge financial loss. And I know there are a lot of people who are opposed to using chemicals, but I'm doing this for a living.
Yeah.
And I'm choosing not to allow wireworm to run me out of business.
Yeah. And
I'm being realistic about it.
Being realistic, absolutely.
And I'm doing all the other things too, but yeah. what I need to do to mitigate a pest problem or an insect problem like this, because they're not bringing any advantage to my farm, any benefit to the farm,
yeah.
I have to do to preserve like my brand.
Yeah, your brand, your longevity, your sustainability as a business.
Yeah.
All of those things come into play.
Yeah.
And we'll save this for another conversation because there's lots that we could talk about. But it really does come down to that.
Yeah.
You know, what do you need to do as a business? Okay, great. Well, we've sufficiently covered this. We're approaching the 1 hour mark.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? So let's do like rapid fire. Things to consider when it comes to laying out a new farm.
Okay, yes. I have two huge pieces of advice for this.
Tell me.
Okay, one, you have to do a survey. You have to know, you have to be able to plot exactly where everything is. You have to know how big the area that you're working is with overall, the yep. whole entire thing.
Yep.
Know your dimensions.
Yep.
And then you have to walk your land. You yes. have to know where water is.
Yes.
Water is huge. You yes. have to know where low points are because that's where you're going to get the cold air collecting.
Yep.
So water for us here, I thought, come moving here, we're going to escape water problems that we had in PA. We have not escaped water problems.
Okay.
And so mark where the water is on that overall plan that you made. So I walked, we measured, I drew it out to scale.
Yep.
And then I walked and I remeasured those areas where there were water issues and put that on the plan. So that was marked and I wasn't planting in those areas. So I am not dealing with water issues in my beds. Those areas have now become like swales or pathways.
Waterways of some capacity.
Yeah, yep. That I'm not, because I'm not going to fight that battle.
Right.
Just not doing it.
And places like that, you could plant water loving things like willows, dogwoods, more swampy oriented plants for sure.
Yeah, so you've got to know the dimensions, you've got to know where the water is, and before you, okay, so three things. You need a soil test.
Okay.
Especially if you're farming in a new spot. Like,
yeah, you don't know shit about your soil composition.
Right, we are super low in calcium.
Interesting.
Super low.
Okay, which is important for dahlia production.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that has been like the addition of...
Yeah.
The right fertilizers and supplements or whatever, so amendments. And then lay out your farm.
Yeah.
Like, what's your big dream? What do you want it to look like
right.
10 years from now?
Right.
Where is everything going to go?
Yeah.
Because if you just get out there with your tiller and you're like, yeehaw, I'm going
to... Oh, God.
I'm tilling this up and I'm planting my cosmos and my zinnias and I'm going to be selling thousands of dollars worth of plant. No, that's not the way to do it. Like, lay it out first. Where do you want your tunnels... Where, if you're going to have tunnels, where do you want them to go?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have permanent plantings,
yeah.
Perennials or woodies or peonies, like where are they going?
Yeah.
Where are you going to put them? Where's the best place to put them? And then where is everything else going? Lay out the 100-foot rows. Where are they going? Which direction are they going? Where is north? Where is south?
Yeah.
Where is west? West. If you have western sun coming, if there's no shade, that's going to be a problem. Like, you have to know your land. And I know so many people just want to, like, plant stuff. But my mistake...
chase the journey. Chase the fantasy of growing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of back-end shit that you have to do to get to that point.
Yeah. I don't wear a sundress.
No sundress?
No.
Oh, my God.
Most of the time, I have dirt on my face.
No sundress? Do
dirt
you...
under my nails. I'm lucky if I'm able to shower like twice a week.
What about like the
dirty light... farmer should be my name.
Oh my God. Jesus. Okay. So when you were mapping or laying things out, did you hire like a very expensive surveyor to come do this for you? Or did you do it on like Google Images, Google Maps?
I did it myself. I had training in... landscape design. Oh, of course.
You did all that shit in London.
So I was able to actually...
Perfect.
I know. Like, one of my previous skills came into play.
Absolutely. And
so I mapped the entire thing myself. Yep. Google Maps is cool. You did this cool thing with Google Maps and, like, you made this, like, whiteboard.
Oh, yeah. The Canva thing.
Yeah, yeah. Of your farm. Yeah. I'm, like, so jealous. I'm, like, I want that.
So, to, like, bring it back a little bit, when I first started laying out my farm... Okay. Let's digress for just a minute.
Okay.
So when baby Drew thought that he was going to and decided that he was going to do this for a living, he came home from community college one night and told his parents that he was doing this and that he was not continuing to go on with his 4-year degree. So what he did was he took a Google Map screenshot of the plantable space, made 4 copies of it, and each copy was a different thing. One copy was the irrigation plan. This is where the water needed to go. One copy was a zoom in of where the greenhouses were going to go. One copy was a zoom in of the annual space and the perennial space. And then they all would fit into the big master plan. That is huge because it gives you a physical representation. You can map off and use the measurement key on Google Earth and Google Maps to like figure out how big 100 feet physically
looks. That just
shows
you how old I am in comparison to baby Drew. Yeah. I'm out there with like my pencil and paper and my little my graph paper.
Nice.
And there's Drew on the computer.
Yeah. And I mean, I would like spend like nights just like scribbling things out with Sharpie to like dictate where the aisles were going to be. And the aisles were going to be 15 feet in between and 20 feet in the drives.
Okay. That's the other big thing.
Okay.
Pathways.
Accessibility.
Accessibility for a freaking dump truck.
Dump truck stuff.
You got to be able to get loads of shit into your farm.
Yeah.
Like literally loads of shit.
Yeah.
and loads of chips and chips loads and, of leaves yeah. and yeah. more shit. Yeah. And so you have to have a way for vehicles to get into your property.
Turn around. And get the fuck back out.
Yeah. So mark where you're going to have them dump the shit.
Yeah.
Presumably in the worst area of the farm.
Right.
So yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
Huge. So you put that onto your plan where you want everything to go. And I would say like put those in first.
Yeah.
And then look at the space you have left.
Absolutely.
And what's going to go where.
Yep. Yep. Definitely.
But for each of my areas where I mapped out the overall the plan, then I have like smaller plans for each of those areas.
Yes. More of like an in-depth zoomed in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you can calculate your measurements. You know exactly how many plants you'll need if you plan those beds in advance. So,
and if all your beds are the same width.
Yeah.
And the majority of them are going to be the very similar length. There might be a little bit of a discrepancy, you know, 42 feet or 55 feet or whatever the case was. You're going to have a really good idea of what you need for plant material.
Right.
It always cracks me up when people are like, well, how many plants do I need? I don't know. You know the measurements of your own shit. Figure it out. Like, you know the square footage of that bed. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your length and your width. That's your area. Are you doing, you know, 6-inch spacing where you'll have 4 plants per square foot? You know, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, how wide are your beds going to be?
Yeah.
I know short folk want, like, skinnier beds.
Oh.
You want that 3-foot wide bed?
Yeah.
People with monstrous arms like me
can handle 8 or 4.
Yeah, well, yeah. I could probably do 8. I mean, my first dahlia bed was like 16 feet wide.
True.
So, how wide do you want those beds to be? Because my perennial beds are only 2 feet wide.
Oh,
they're only 2 feet, and then my pathways are 3 feet.
Okay, let's talk about equipment to invest in.
Okay, equipment to invest in. So going from a small farm.
Yeah.
To the size that I'm working with now, we need a tiller.
Yep.
So tractor has a bucket for hauling shit.
Yep.
A tiller for tilling shit.
Yep.
A flail mower.
For killing shit.
Yep. And a bed maker for mounding shit.
Yep. Do you have an auger?
I do not, but I have dreams someday of having an auger.
I will tell you, if you're getting into the shrub business, you have to have an auger.
You're looking, see these guns? Those are my auger.
Mama... No, we kill ourselves enough. By the damn auger.
Even my shrubs are on mounded beds.
Which cracks me up a lot.
So the area the shrubs are in is a wet area.
Okay.
So they're slightly raised.
Okay.
In order to give them a good start. But now I'm mitigating some of the drainage issues in that area. So, but they're mounded. So the bed mounder is a game changer. I used to hand mound. The dahlia beds, PA, the water pressure was so bad.
Yeah.
There was almost a 3-foot difference between the top of the mound and the bottom of the trench.
No shit.
Yeah, and those trenches would fill with water. So I was like, raised beds for me were the way to go. And I'm glad I did here too because we have heavy clay.
Yeah.
So we're mounding and incorporating organic material. So the bed mounder makes about an 8-inch, 10-inch mound.
Okay.
And so... it's just easier to plan it. The drainage is much better because we do get pretty heavy storms here.
Okay.
When we do get rain in the summer. It's, and then, it defines the pathways a little bit better for me too. So
one thing that we've found kind of through like the years of doing this too, because our whole farm is on a hill. So drainage is, and moving water is a really big deal of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of similar, but just more exaggerated than your farm. Our hill is.
Yep. Mark on your plan where the low point, like the which way the water is flowing, like know your water flow, which way the water is flowing.
But my point is what I was going to say is that instead of mounding all of your beds, what we've done is around each greenhouse that we have and around each like growing bed block rather, we make that growing space the high point. So like our entire annual fields are elevated, so that as the rainfall comes down,
It drains
into the driveways.
Do you do that with machinery?
Everything was graded before it was planted and laid out.
Yeah, I think we have some areas that still need to be developed, and they are very uneven. So I was looking at it yesterday and thinking, like, I need to do something to level that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Have we covered water, or is there still more things we need to talk about with water?
Irrigation or water as in too much water?
I don't know. You said that we needed to talk about it, so I wrote it down, but I think
Water, our water system. Oh, before you buy your farm, before you buy your farm. Kind of do a little bit of research about what's been grown there before, if anything has, okay. what the land's been used for. But water, do you have a water source? This is so incredibly important. Can you drill a well? We can't drill a well where we are.
You can't drill a well?
No, there was no site on our property to be able to drill a well. No viable well source.
Shit.
And you cannot be a larger farm and use city water.
Yeah.
There's no way.
You can't.
Do you have a water source? Like, for real. It became such a huge problem for us until we discovered during this, like, exploration period of, like, how the hell are we getting water to the field? Because I can't use a hose from the house. That there is a natural spring at the front of the property.
Isn't that magical?
It was very... It saved my ass.
Yeah.
That was pumping, like... 35 gallons a minute.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So the irrigation company basically, well, our neighbor across the street told us.
That it was a thing?
That it never was dry. And I'm like, how can that be? It's never been dry. In like the 40 years that he's lived there, it's never been dry. So they did some looking and there's actually a natural spring.
Perfect.
So we designed a system that pumped from the spring all the way back to the pond. Yep. And then...
The pond
then goes, it's a holding area.
Yep.
Then that's where the water comes from. But if we didn't have that spring, I would have been screwed.
Yeah.
So, no, just before you buy your farm, if you're going to buy a farm.
Yeah, know where your water's coming from.
Yeah.
I know growers that their only option is city water. And God, one is it's expensive for sure. But, you know, if that's your only option, that's your option. So you just factor that into your production plan. That's a cost of doing business for you.
But if you're moving, like we did,
right?
That
different story.
Honestly, we were on a well in PA, so it did not cross my mind, and it should have, because that should have been hammered out before we bought the place to know that we could, that we would be free of city water, that we would be able to irrigate using just resources on our own property. So please, before you buy a farm, if that's what your intention is, get the water source sussed out first.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Any closing thoughts? Things people need to know? Make it quick.
Okay. So find your people.
Okay.
Find your people. Know who your people are.
Yep.
Help each other out.
And in that process, be real.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants a fake bitch.
No.
We don't have time for those.
No. And, you know, if you need help, don't ask someone to just come pick their brain.
Ah.
I don't have time. I do not have time for you to come pick my brain. I don't. I'm really, really sorry, but like...
We're running businesses and farms over here. Yeah. And unless you've got a staff of a group of people to do the daily operations, your time is tied up.
Yeah.
You're planting, you're growing, you're harvesting, you're selling. It's tough. I get it.
So don't just reach out and say, can I pick your brain? That is not the way to go about doing this.
Right.
But like find your people and if you want to learn, there are shit tons of resources out there, and instead of, you know, do your homework.
Yeah.
Do your homework and figure it out. I don't know everything. I mean, I'm learning. I think we all are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every year I fuck up and then I
figure it out.
I figure it out based on my fuck up. Yeah. So, and my situation is different than yours. And different than Kluchik, and different than Seven Hand Farm.
Yeah.
And so what works for me isn't necessarily going to work for them.
Right.
So it's trial and error, and there's no magic bullet. And for anybody who says this is easy, they're a liar.
Blowing smoke up your ass.
They are a liar. And expect to lose a lot of money.
Yeah. Because it's...
on crops, on infrastructure, on, you know, just you have to spend money to make money.
This is your education also. Like, you are learning as you're doing. And the only constant in life is change. So unless you're willing to fuck up, do it again, and learn in the process, baby, this is the wrong industry for you.
Yeah. And it is not sundresses.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I'm, like, the worst because I will show, like, these beautiful dahlias. Do you know who's not in the picture most – or what's not in the picture most of the time? Me.
Oh, you or the dead shit in the back.
Right. I did show – I showed the compost pile one, or the dahlia – the dead pile. The ones that didn't make it.
Yeah.
And I got so much shit from people
online. Oh my God.
They're like, well, can't you give this to a nursing home? Ugh. Or like, that's such a waste. And I'm like, they're not saleable.
You
like,
don't get it.
We're not going to sell shit. Yeah. So anything that doesn't make the cut. And I'm lucky that Bloom Chick Harvest with me because she's got much better eyes. And so she was like, she'd like rip one out of the good pile. She's like, don't you see the damage? And I'm like, okay,
you're right.
But yeah, so, and you know, that's also part of finding your people is you have to find people who are going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like if I am doing something that is like not great or like not profitable, or if I'm missing something, like, you need to tell me. If, like, you see it, point it out. Because it's not... I'm not going to be offended. I need your help. Like, because I can't think of all the things on my own. And sometimes I fall behind. And, like, tell me.
You need that level of honesty and transparency from the people that are in your circle.
Yes.
Not from random bitches on Instagram.
Yes! Yes. If I don't know you, please don't.
Please don't tell me that I'm an absolute monster and that my dead grandma is going to be ashamed of me using her name in my business. Like, this is absolute bullshit. I don't care. I don't need this from you.
I think your dead grandma would be so proud of you.
I think so too. Oh my God. Same.
She would be like, honey, we all fuck up sometimes.
Fuck the bitches.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm proud of you.
Okay.
Wink,
thanks.
Wink.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
your wine's not gone yet, by the way.
My what? Oh.
Your wine.
Yours is. You have a smaller glass, though.
Well,
we got somebody here pouring big glasses.
Wonder who the enabler would be.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, find your people.
Yes.
Be completely 100% honest and transparent. It's not going to hurt their feelings. They need the critical feedback.
Yeah.
But what we don't need are random trolls criticizing us.
Yes.
Like, sure. keep it to yourself. Like, move on. If you don't like what I'm doing, move on. It's not going to hurt my feelings. Right. I don't even know that you don't like me.
I'm not even going to know. Yeah.
You don't need to point it out.
You don't need to tell me a sob story about the invasive species that I'm clearing out of my backfield. Like, I don't need that shit.
You know, I think as farmers, we criticize ourselves enough every single day.
Absolutely. Because it's us doing the things. And we're like, you know, this is the way it should be, or we should be doing it this way, or yeah.
So-and-so can do it better. And I try not to compare.
Don't do that.
I know, but sometimes it's really hard because we show those pretty photos.
But you know what I didn't show on Instagram was the $20,000 worth of greenhouse crops that I lost at the end of the season because my manager forgot to turn the heaters back on.
I thought about that all last night. I am so
I didn't show that.
So sad.
Should I have? I yes. But it was also like, you know what? This is part of life. This is how this goes.
I think when I realized I had wireworm, I messaged you because I figured you deal with all the crappy pests. Like, you're going to know what this is. I, like, cried to you, but I did not go on Instagram and cry about it.
Right.
I've cried many nights about losing so many tubers, but I'm not going to post that. But maybe I should have.
It is what it is. Can't change it now.
Maybe I should have. People need to know. It's hard.
People need to know. Okay. Well, Miss Erica, it was lovely chatting with you. It was lovely meeting you this trip as well. Thanks for opening up your farm. Too.
Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks
absolutely.
For coming. It's so good to meet you.
Yes, you too.
I love our people here.
We have so much. We have such a great group. Corinne is over here doing something on Google. Karen is being fabulous as always, taking pictures and recording.
Corinne is doing tulip research.
Surprise, surprise.
Karen's doing the filming.
Anyway, thank you so much. If you're listening to the podcast, this will be coming to you at some point. You're going to know because it'll be available. We'll have more growers interviews coming in the next few weeks as well. If you have questions for Miss Erica, you can follow her on Instagram and comment on her photos how wonderful she looks and about
direct
what
all questions to Clara Joyce Flowers.
And you might not get an answer. Anyway, you can follow her. I'll tag her Instagram account and link it in the description of this episode.
I am very transparent in my answers.
You're straightforward.
I am. So if you ask a question, I try to answer everybody's questions.
Yep.
I do.
Yep.
Just don't DM me for
really specific things. And yeah, no. Like,
pick my brain.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyways, check back next week. We'll have more cool stuff. Thank you, Miss Erica. Round of applause. You did a fabulous job. Yay. Thanks for being here. Have a great day. Have a great life. Don't die. And I'll see you next week. Bye.